Let's talk a little goaltending with Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. Woods, how you doing?
I'm good. Full-size chocolate bars. That's how you roll. Although, I got to be honest, when you in that little preamble there, you had me at nibs.
Nibs are awesome, eh? I love them.
Oh, might just have a little bit of a habit, bad habit slash addiction to the nibs. And I'm with you. Still like to get dressed up. Unfortunately, my 12-year-old actually saying this is her last Halloween, and I'm a little bit shook up by that. I mean, I still have the life-size, like, literally, like, three-foot diameter head Elmo costume that I used to take them out in, and, you know, you got to get right into it. It's nothing like having the little kids. You're out with your kids, and the little kids come running up to you because they thought you really were Elmo, and so excited, move near tears to show you that, hey, my candy bag is you, Elmo. And big hugs, and there's just Halloween's the best. Oh. And candy on top of it.
I know, it's unbelievable. Whoever invented it, it's fantastic. Like, we need like an adult version of Halloween where you just go to people's door, ring the doorbell, and they give you a beer. I mean, unbelievable. It really creates some community spirit. Sure.
I do happen my second go to on the costumes is the, not to go stereotypical Simpsons on you, but is the Duffman. And I do last Halloween, went and trick or treated with the kids, and the adults partook in some Duffman style beverages as we walked around with the kids around the neighborhood.
I do know there's always a few wise adults in the neighborhood who, especially when, like, this Halloween's going to be great here in Edmonton. It's not cold out tonight at all, but on years that it's a little chilly, I do know that there's usually when you'd walk around, I'm like, why are all those adults over there huddling? Oh, yeah, that's right. They have their little table set up, and they've got all their Baileys and everything else out there, and the kids just run around the street, and mom and dad have a few Baileys. So, smart. Nice. Let's talk a little goaltending, Kevin. Obviously, it's Devan Dubnyk. Let's start there. Back-to-back-to-back shutouts. I don't care what league you're in. The Minnesota Wild and their goaltender are rolling right now.
Absolutely, and I'm not going to say told you so on Dubnyk because I think I said I told you so last year too, and it didn't work out quite as well. But, as I said before, he's a guy I get to spend some time with in the summers and see how he trains. There are some changes he's made in his game. We've talked about tracking and head trajectory, and he's one of the early adopters of it. And, you know, he learned some lessons last year about, you know, not so much, he always believed in it, but he didn't recognize when he was getting away from it last year or why he was getting away from it last year a little bit. And so the work he did this summer physically in terms of his training with Adam Francilia and Colonna was really dedicated to making sure his body was strong in ways that would allow him to maintain a stance and a posture that facilitated proper head movement. And so he's not sitting down as much in his stance, which allows him to stay up and over the puck. And in a nutshell, it's a continuation of the evolution that brought him to Minnesota after being a reclamation project for the Arizona Coyotes, saw him become a Vezina finalist that first year in Minnesota, and frankly was a guy who I thought last year would take this step. There's been a learning curve. This year he's taking it. And let's be honest, Boudreaux, we saw it with the Ducks last year when they struggled to score. He made sure their attention was on their own end. Defensively, the Wild are paying attention to the right kind of details for Boudreaux and for Dubnyk, and he's benefiting from that. So he's a guy that I think reads the game well. He's obviously got the size, and he's got incredible hands for his size, and he's just continuing to put those pieces into place and get comfortable with them. As he said to me this summer, he really does believe that philosophy, that tracking, that head trajectory is a foundation. It touches every part of his game, from his skating to his set to his saves to his post-save recovery. But as he said to me this summer, still just scratching the tip of the iceberg with it and still trying to get into the point where it's every day for him. Is he going to have a shout-out every night? No, but it's a good start for him. And I think the Wild, as a team that a lot of people maybe thought would take a step back and still are struggling with injuries, needed that start from their goaltender so that everyone was on the same page and buying into what Bruce is selling there in Minnesota.
Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine, NHL.com, joins us. Kevin, I've been reading a lot on people like, Well, Cam Talbot, it's not sustainable what he's doing. And I'm like, well, his career save percentage is 925. I understand he's at 936 on the season, but it's not like these numbers are so grossly overinflated for what Talbot's proven he can do in his career in New York and Edmonton.
No, and, you know, again, like 937 is at a time when save percentage around the league is down. You know, that's off the charts good and better than anyone's ever had in a single season. So do you expect him to post a 937 for the year? Probably not, because nobody has. But I'm with you. These are the reasons that Edmonton targeted him. Small sample size, yes, in New York, but signs of a game that should hold up pretty well, especially when the structure's half decent in front of them. And, you know, it's interesting. We talked about Cam last week and you know, speculated a little bit, especially after the Buffalo goal a couple weeks ago, about some of the things that I was seeing in his game those first few games, because it wasn't quite there out of the gates to start this season. Structure wasn't there in front of him as well. And one of the things I said was it just felt like there was a little drift in his game out of the chute, a little more movement than we're used to, which led to a little bit more opening up in his lateral movements and just not being set. And so when he came through town here in Vancouver after the game against the Canucks and a good game, and the press had kind of disbanded, we had just a little chat about that, and he agreed. And he did say that, you know, at times that drift and that extra movement was a function of what was going on in front of him and a lot of rush chances and a lot of times where guys were getting good looks with pass opportunities. So you can get a little happy feet and uncertain and not be set in those situations. But he agreed that that was part of his problem early, not, you know, to go back to Benoit Laire's old coach with the New York Rangers, beat the pass, question answer. So beat the pass and solve the equation. He was not beating the pass and getting set and square. And that little extra movement can make a huge difference in a goaltender's game. When I watch him now, he is beating the pass. He is beating the play. He is set. He is square. And when he's going laterally on the bang-bang plays, I think of the save on Granlund here in Vancouver on the back door. He's not reaching into those plays. He's tracking it across and pushing, so he's coming across upright over his knees rather than getting spread out wide and opening up and making desperation saves. He's getting across and giving himself a chance to make what are still spectacular saves, but he's not one and done. He's not all, you know, on his stomach and spread out and reaching. And I think, again, that Granlund save is a perfect example of that. Fantastic glove save on that back door. But even if he hadn't caught that clean, if there'd been a second chance opportunity, he would have been set square over his knees and balanced and able to react to that as well. He didn't sell the farm on a lateral play, and that's kind of what I saw in his game in the first three.
Kevin, Oilers take on the Toronto Maple Leafs. Freddie Anderson was not off to a great start, although the defense in front of him sure allow some pretty quality opportunities to be given up. What do you make of his game and his play, and is there cause for concern?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny because we asked the same question of Brian Elliott last week, and I said he'd be fine, and lo and behold, he got on a bit of a run and looked pretty good for three straight games. I know they lost the other night, but kind of turned it around. And I think you don't panic on small sample sizes when you see what that goalie's been capable of in the past. The questions that get asked with Anderson are because the spotlight has changed and there's going to be an adjustment there in addition to a new conference, a new system, a lot of shooters where he doesn't have quite the same familiarity as he would in the West. A lot of focus too on whether or not the Maple Leafs and whether how much is driven by Mike Babcock have asked him to play a different style in terms of his positioning. And, you know, that comes from two sources. One, Babcock has asked for it, has kind of, you know, in Detroit, talking to the goaltenders there, preferred that, hey, listen, my system, my guys have the back door, and that means you need to square up on the shooter, and you can square up on the shooter, and there's positives there if you're a goaltender. Reimer loved it, that, hey, it's not my fault on the back door and the lateral pass. All I got to do is take care of that shooter so I can do so confidently. And every goalie will tell you they like that. But squaring up confidently and being asked to be aggressive are two different things, especially if you're Frederik Andersen, a guy who typically plays a contained around the edges of the crease maximum game. And so when you see, when you know his game and know where he plays on the ice, and then you see him in Toronto uncharacteristically going well beyond the edges of his crease, you start to wonder if he's being asked to change his game. Now, I talked to someone close to it, and they insisted that that wasn't the case. And this kind of fits the MO of most goalie coaches. They want a goaltender to get comfortable in a new situation with their game before they ask them to change aspects of it. So that makes sense. Yet, I can see where the, you know, where the questions are coming from, because I've never seen that type of aggression in Frederik Andersen's game. And it's, you know, it's not all the time, but there are times where it is, I mean, it's at the extremes. It is 2 feet outside the edge of his crease on end zone play. And it's cost him, where he's not able to cover that distance back when the pass does get across. So there's a lot of focus on that depth management, understandably so, just because it is so different from him. And a lot of focus on how he's handling the mental side. But I thought he was, I'll be honest, I didn't get a chance to see the Islanders game. I thought he was good in the Montreal game. He was good in the win before that. And what I noticed in those games is, for the most part, not absolutely through the whole thing, especially on Weber, there were a couple times he came outside of the blue, again, uncharacteristically so. But for the most part, he played a contained game on end zone. And to me, that's where Frederik Andersen has always been the most comfortable. He's 6'4". He's got great hands. And like Talbot, set and square is when he's at his best. When you come outside of your crease, and a lot of people talk about cutting down the angle, you're also cutting down your time to react. And I've seen signs of that when he gets too far out his crease. The other thing is, it's a lot of people focus, and I'm doing it right now, on where a goaltender plays, Jason. Is he at the edge of his crease? Is he beyond it? Is he deep within his crease? To me, it's more important how you get there. In other words, Frederik Andersen is an inside-out goaltender, so is Cam Talbot, for the most part.
Okay.
They're going to prioritize angle and then take depth if they make a read. They're not going to go way out and retreat with the play, or what we call an outside-in goaltender. And so when you ask a guy to play more aggressively, you can create a different movement pattern. You're not just asking him to get out. You're asking him to change how he moves and how he gets set. And I wonder if there was a little bit of that in Andersen's game, because the signs would be he's off angle, he's moving, he's losing his net, and I saw signs of all those things. There are times where he's getting beat early this season because he's squared on the shooter, not the stick, where literally it looks like he's lost out there, he's lost his net, and when you consider how rarely he's played that far out, it kind of makes sense that he might be a little lost out there.
And what do you make of the performance yesterday here in Edmonton by Mr. Andersen after learning that his wife, Nicole, has cancer?
I'm not sure what you add to it, Jace. I think it spoke for itself. I think without him needing to speak to it, the emotions that you could see from his teammates, from him when they greeted him at the end of the game, the emotions you could see as he was in the tunnel waiting to come out, the emotions you could see when he did come out. And I mean, what a... you learn a lot about, but no surprise, about what a person Cam Talbot is, and the fans in Edmonton, after a tough loss, to give him that reaction. I'm not sure I can add anything to it other than to say, your thoughts are with him, and you hope he can find a way to balance the two, because it's got to be incredibly tough right now to feel like, you know, he wants to be there for his teammates, but obviously the priority is to be there for his family.
And one last one, the New York Islanders. We saw it in Edmonton a few years ago. Three goaltenders never work. So what do you see happening on Long Island?
I can tell you, you don't need to be a stats major or an analytics freak to understand that three goaltenders does not divide very well into two nets. Never has, never will. You can approach it the right way. Devan Dubnyk, we started about him, 38 straight games that year in Minnesota. He says the only reason he could is because they had two other goalies. So he went out, got his goalie-specific work with the goalie coach, and then got off and let the other guys deal with practice. The problem in New York is none of those guys are playing 38 straight. Nobody's really clearly the number one. It's more problematic when everybody thinks they should be playing. We saw it in Calgary last year. Three guys for half a season. All of them thought they should be playing. That's no good for anyone. It's a bad dynamic in the room. It's a bad dynamic in terms of practice habits and time on ice. And the Islanders, you know, frankly, it's interesting to see that originates, you know, and from the agent. The Islanders are a team that hired Yaroslav Halak's sort of personal private goalie coach so that he could have him there with them, because Halak found their internal goalie coaching a little inadequate. Mike Dunham, not full-time, and, you know, from what I understand, not very active, not very engaged with the goaltenders there. And so he wanted more of a day-to-day presence, and they allowed to bring in his guy. He travels with the team. Obviously, that's not enough. I'd heard rumblings of Halak being not happy, going back to last season before the injury. And obviously, the Islanders continue to think this can work, and those frustrations are going to build. It's not good for anyone there. It'll be interesting to see how it resolves itself. So I think if ever there was a time to sell in Halak, it'd be coming off of that World Cup. The fact they've had no interest, or reportedly have had no interest, even at $4.5 million with another year on it, tells you a lot about the goalie market. And just teams that are up against the cap like L.A., even when they need help, they can't necessarily go get help. So I'm curious as anyone to see how this one plays out. In the meantime, the one guy I know who won't be affected is Thomas Greiss, because I have never met anyone who, no matter what the situation to him, that is water off a duck's back every time. He may be the most laid-back goaltender in the NHL, and clearly the other two goalies, Berube and Halak, clients of Alan Walsh, not handling it quite as well at this point.
Kev, as always, good stuff, man. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, Jason.
Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com.